hello, we are starting again. Yes, after difficulties have now been solved, we shall just repeat everything that we said, except for in a funnier way.
No.
Oh, so I wrote a haiku. I wanted to read to you. It is not life that changes or becomes better. It is you, my dear.
Yeah, haikus have always been something for me that I've been like, okay, but where's the rest of the sentence? There's something in my brain that's...
Wait, there's more.
No, there's supposed to be more words. Like, right. What's
happening?
I feel you on that. Yeah. My ADHD brain is like, no, what?
That's not enough.
Did I tell you about that post that I saw on Twitter? This Dr. ADHD guy was making a post about it, always feeling like you're failing. Did I tell you about that?
No.
When I read it, I was just like, oh, damn, that's extremely hella accurate. And then all these people underneath it were like, hey, other people feel like this. It's not just, it's not just me. So that was nice too. But that always boggles my mind, to be honest with you, because most people in my mind have it much more together than me, like way much more together. But then I'll read something like that or hear something someone will say, and I'm like, oh, you're struggling that bad as well. I guess my thing is just I don't know necessarily how to fake it.
But you do, you just don't know it.
Maybe. So welcome everyone to Butterflies and Bravery. We actually had a really very cool day today. We were guests on another podcast. We were interviewed as guests, Critical End Thinking, yeah.
With Ty Barnett and Ian Harris.
They're great. They're really great. And I really like the direction that they take their podcast. Like that whole critical thinking piece is just, we were talking about, just so missing. Lisa had interviewed with them a few months ago, right? Yeah. I'm assuming that during their interview, something came up and she's like, well, let's get everybody on here. And so, yeah, they all came in. Four of us guests and then both of them.
Yes, it was Lisa Kendall, the founder of Countercult Coalition that I work with, and then Grace Bowling, who also works with the Countercult Coalition. And then Whisper, of course, representing I-5 Freedom Network.
And Butterflies and Bravery.
And Butterflies and Bravery. And Jemima representing herself. No. Representing lots of things.
So the direction of the interview was around critical thinking. And both Ty and Ian definitely had some questions that were interesting because a lot of their questions would have been better directed to a first generation, to an FGA, because like when Ty asked, what's the hook? we were born into it. That's the hook. You know that, of course, we answered to the best of our ability. And it is in a lot of ways, secondhand information. But it's also observed information. We sat there. It was like a theater run in front of us the whole entire time. There were very few, probably even days, but at least there was never a week that went by where I wasn't like, what are you, why? What is the reasoning behind that? Like the kind of things that they would just come up with and no explanation. Like I was saying, it's just the do it because daddy said so. And about trying to break down your critical thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Like that's literally, I'm not going to give you any leeway to think whatsoever. You're just going to do it because I said so. And we watched that. We watched our parents' generation walk into that wall. But for us, it was just a way of life. I think by the time we got around talking a little bit more and as they were asking about, okay, how'd you get out? Because that's probably in a lot of ways the bigger feat than someone who joined and then left. it's really the bigger feet because we're out there on our own. Your choice is homelessness or...
Yeah, not only that, but challenging someone's belief system is one of the most difficult and painful things. I was watching Adam Ruins Everything today, and he was actually talking about that. He was saying that when you challenge someone's beliefs, not even their mind, but their subconscious mind is already going to not want to listen to you because you're basically challenging the whole structure that your mind has built. And he said it's incredibly painful to realize that it's wrong and that what you've believed and what you've done or what you've been taught to do, more like in our situation, is wrong. And I thought that was really interesting because I was like, dude, that is straight up the truth. Like, it is one of the hardest things to do, to change everything around you. And that can be why so many people choose to stay in the situation that they're in, even though they know it's not the most healthy situation. I've been talking to someone with listening service that has that exact issue. She's in a situation that she knows is unhealthy, but doesn't feel like she has a choice of anywhere else to go because her whole mind is like, this is home. This is love. This is the way it is. And I'm like, girl, you need to change the situation. But that takes not only immense courage, but immense effort as well.
Because you're betting all in against yourself, basically, when you're going to set out from something as entrenched as being born into a cult. And you set out to change that. Yeah, you're talking about uprooting everything and just going into something that you have no clue about. It's like, are you going to jump off of this cliff and trust that there's water there? Like, you haven't seen it. Like, that is a lot of the feeling it was when it was like, okay, we got to get out of here. But then, okay, now what? Like, how do we, and we talked about it before though, of course, that I think different areas, at least in the children of God, the different areas of the world you are in is going to have different levels. If you're trying to leave the cult in England, there might be more options available to you than there were for, you know, us in Thailand. That's not to say that somebody should have done something differently than what they did. There were definitely some situations that we were in where it was just, you had no choice. You were going to either turn right or left. It wasn't like, oh, what are the different pathways I can take? We didn't even get into the interview today that we didn't have money, that we were not allowed to touch money.
No. You don't really have time in that short amount of time with that amount of people and setting to even cover. I don't think in any universe 1 hour would be enough to even cover our lives unless it was somebody speed reading like really fast. No.
Yeah.
I was going to say about the changing your life thing. It's not just leaving the castle and going on a mission. It's like leaving the castle and getting in the Doctor Who phone booth and ending up in an entirely different universe. I think that's kind of a good analogy about the way it was for us, because it wasn't just changing from this house to that house or changing from this church to that church or even changing from this marriage to that marriage. It was all of those things. And it was like stepping into an entirely different world, like going into Narnia, like, whoa, what the fuck is this? And where am I? And what's going on over here? And who are these people?
And in a lot of ways, because of the way that we were indoctrinated, if you step outside of these parameters of our blessed elite life of being the chosen ones, if you step out of that, God's going to punish you. So just by deciding, taking the first steps to get out of there, to escape, you are also having to face up to your belief system right then and there. It's not, okay, these guys are not exactly Christian, I'm having this problem, that problem. It's not at all like that. It's like, okay, do I believe that what they've been telling me is true or not. Because it's not just, oh, I don't like how I'm being treated or I don't like the situation that I'm in. It's not just that. It's all the things. But when I do think about, you know, the question that was asked in the interview today, why don't you leave? Which everybody asks the question to domestic abuse, to human trafficking, to cult babies. But I think not having money, I mean, that's like a really substantial thing. And it's not like you can go open a lemonade stand on the corner of Rom-Com Hang in
Bangkok. You know? Piece of lemonade stand. Help this poor Falong. That's basically how I raised money to go to Russia. And it wasn't that bad. But
if you were going to another country and you were going to stay inside the cult, you would get the support of the commune of the home. When we decided to split and we told them that we are going to the mission field, they were like, okay, every Friday or every Saturday or whatever, you can go out and do your begging and you get to keep the proceeds of that. That home that we were in, they were really big on the buckets at the stoplights.
Canning.
Yeah, canning. So,
isn't that what they called it? They should have called it bucketing.
Yeah, so like we get one day of the week that's like, okay, you can have the money.
With me, it was 50-50.
Oh.
You get 50% of everything you raise, and you give us 50% of everything you raise, minus expenses, of course. But yeah, it took me a long time to raise enough to go to Russia.
Are there other extremist cults that we know of or that we've talked to that have that control over the finances the way that the Children of God did? In fact, because most people that we've been able to talk to or have heard from, or even in our experience of walking this earth, most of the cult members, ex-members or born-ins, have been in the Western world. And that was their experience. Like you were saying earlier today, we have that unique experience, first of all, of being raised overseas, traveling around from country to country, crossing borders, legally, illegally. I haven't heard of any other cult that we've interviewed or that we've talked to where they were like, yeah, we had to turn in every single penny that we made. We're not allowed to hold any money whatsoever.
Yeah, no, because all of those ones are dead. They all drank the Kool-Aid and died.
Yeah, that was probably it. If we circle back around to the ugly shit, the other thing that I hadn't thought of for quite some time is that, do you remember we had to turn in our passports?
Yeah. For sure.
Now that I live out in the real world, I understand so much more now how significant that is. Yeah. Confiscating your ID, your passport. So when you talk about money and you talk about your passport being gone, because we were overseas, right? Your choice gets chopped down to you can go homeless. And it was scary, at least for me. I don't know if you saw this, but it wasn't that unusual to see foreigners, to see white people begging on the streets of Thailand, because they would get there, the backpackers, and then they come on practically nothing, thinking that like they can work their way through something. There's going to be hostels, whatever. And then something goes sideways one way or another and they're out of money and they have nothing. They have no way to get home or go anywhere. And they will sit there begging on the street next to all this, all the other beggars and all the other trash and that whole side of things that was scary and ugly. And I just, that was one of my big things, was that's my choice. Like sitting on the sidewalk of Bangkok, trying to get enough baht for food and then home. Cause yeah, I don't even know if, cause we were minors. So I'm at least for a while, I don't even know what that would entail if we could walk into the embassy and say, hey, I don't have my passport, because most of us weren't born in the United States. So it's not like they could be like, okay, let me look up your birth certificate or let me look up your social security number. There wouldn't be one. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty far up there when you talk about that type of control and coercion, is that they would hold our passports.
You're right. Now I'm like, the fuck? I would not give that to anybody. I don't care who you are.
I hadn't thought about it for quite a while until just the last couple of days. I was going, oh my God, they took our passports. And even if you went out and you took your passport with you, the leader that was with you on the team would hold it. You would never have a hold of that. Speaking of passports, I'm going down a side road. Have I ever showed you those tattoos that people have where they're like the passport stamps? It's a collage of passport stamps from different countries.
I think so.
Yeah. So I love that idea as a tattoo. And I'm a traveler just by nature. I'm never going to be not a traveler. So that's always appealed to me. But it came back to me when I was writing that chapter for my book, because I'd always wonder what happened to our passports, because the proof that I lived in 14 countries, where did all those stamps go? And I forgot that when we left Malaysia, because we were blacklisted, my mom put all of our passports in the bathtub and poured bleach on them and let them sit overnight. Obviously now with technology, that wouldn't have wrecked them, but in those days, sure did. And so they were just no pictures, no stamps, no nothing. And that gave them the excuse to go get new passports that wouldn't have the blacklisted stamp in them. But yeah, wow. There's certain things for sure about my past, that backstory, that I would have really liked to have been able to keep and connect with. And certainly my old passports would have been really high up there.
Yeah, for sure.
Because then, for example, if I took my passport and got a tattoo based on the countries I'd been in, you would be putting the authentic date and country stamp on your tattoo. It'd be pretty cool. I think that was a divergent trail. Because did you know that my stepfather taught the military there in Thailand for years and years? When we got blacklisted in Malaysia, the leadership, they wanted us to come to Thailand, and everybody in Thailand would take their visa trips, right? Down to Malaysia. They would give you 6 months, right? You could get 3 months and then a 3 month extension, something like that. So yeah, people were there for years on a quote unquote tourist visa. And just by going back and forth to the border twice a year. But we never did, from the moment that we stepped into the country, because of that situation in Malaysia, we wouldn't have been able to cross that border. So as soon as we got to Thailand, they hooked my stepfather up with a teaching job for the military, which, if you remember, like, very few people did that. It was definitely a big honor. Yeah. It like meant you're like, whatever. And so, yeah, he really thought he was fucking something, because he had that. We never had to leave the country. We were there the entire time straight for the 12 years. So essentially he had a working visa, I guess, really. And Thailand's so awesome. They're like, oh, you have 8 children and a wife? Sure, we'll give them all visas too.
That's crazy. That sucks for you, because those visa trips were the best.
I know.
The best fucking times were the visa trips, because you got to eat out and you got to have exposure.
You got to ride a train.
One time we rented bicycles and rode down to the beach. You got to do activities because you were there. You had to be there. It was a week trip. It was a day and a half down, a day and a half back. And then you waited for like 2 days and then you got your visa. So you had 2 days of waiting where you couldn't really do anything and you weren't allowed to preach the gospel there. So we would go and fucking lay on the beach and take bicycle trips and go sneak in through sweet hotels and snag a towel and go lay by their pool.
I had such, like we all did, we had such bad FOMO.
Oh, I bet, because I don't blame you. Those were some of my happiest times in Thailand.
Right, because you're stepping outside of
was not in Thailand,
of the concentration camp situation that we are in.
Yeah.
Is it bad to use that word? I don't know. The thing that always was super weird to me, though, was when children were born in the country, they wouldn't go and get them passports or legal papers or anything so that they could be, quote unquote, a citizen of the country. I think I was 14, living in one of the homes, one of the communes, and one of the single moms had to go take her visa trip, and she had a baby, and they're like, no, you can't take the baby. So she left her baby with me, 14 years old, left her 3-month-old baby with me, and went across on a visa trip for a week. Now, I'm not saying she did it willingly. She was very upset. But the leadership were like, we're not going to pay for that visa. No, he's in there. He's a citizen of this country. He's going to stay. And this kid, this poor little fucking baby, had colic, for one thing. He had colic. And he had only been nursed. He'd only been breastfed. And they're like, well, bye. Here, Whisper. Here's the baby. Good luck. Up until that point, until they literally handed him to me, like, all he'd known is his mom's nursing. Oh, that was an awful week. It was. I can't even tell you how many times that week that I just broke down in tears. They kept trying all these different things, trying to get him to eat, and he wouldn't take the bottle for anything. Finally, we talked about it, and somebody was like, let's try coconut water for him, because the baby coconuts, they have all those nutrients. It's actually pretty substantial, electrolytes and all that kind of stuff. And that he started taking, but it had been three days before that kid ate, and he would just cry because colic, right? The only thing that got him to stop crying was I'd lay him down in one of those rattan chairs, spun, and just swung him back and forth as fast and as hard as I could. It's the only time he didn't cry. And that's when I would start crying. But yeah, it's crazy thinking about something like that now as a mother. Imagine just leaving your 3-month-old baby. You don't know what's going to happen. And especially because she knew that he had colic. It was a very difficult situation. And they're like, no, you can't take him. What if she got denied at the border? Then what? You know what I mean? But yeah, it's just another one of those things that we didn't really question, because that was our way of life. There wasn't any other way that we knew.
Yeah, exactly. No critical thinking. Yes, I had zero. And I actually remember when I think I was 15 or 16, I was at the school, the training center in Thailand. I remember, I think it was when Mary was in isolation for her doubts. She was having doubts. Remember that? And they isolated her quite a while.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, probably just shouldn't think. Because if you think, you're going to have doubts. And if you have doubts, you're going to get isolated and in trouble. Maybe just try to stop thinking. But I actually remember going through that thought process in my head of, okay, we need to not think, because if we do, we're going to get hurt.
So I remember we would fight to get a chance to be on the bottom bunk in our sleeping situations, because we could put all this stuff at the top of the bunk. And I would just fill it with drawings and quotes and all this kind of stuff. So when I was trying to sleep, I could sit there and just read it. It was the only thing that could keep my mind quiet. But yeah, we were very happy when we were in that state.
Yeah. And anybody that did think or tried to make others think was instantly removed from the situation. The only people who were, I wouldn't say allowed to leave, but the people who were encouraged to leave and aided on their mission in leaving were the ones who were vocal about their doubts and would not submit and would not comply and would not conform. They would automatically try first to silence you and to change you. But if that didn't work, it was, you're out. You and your parents, you all are out. They just kicked people out. Kids, young kids.
Yeah, they sent Joe out. He was somewhere between 15 and 16. But yeah, just took him to his home country, which is in Europe. He didn't speak a word of the language, didn't speak a word of any of the languages. 15-year-old kid just dropped him there and then left him. It's really funny because when you think about it, nowadays, my healthy critical thinking skills say if something is correct, if something is right, then it can withstand shit. You can come against me with whatever argument that you have. You're not going to convince me that I should spank my kids. I can watch any movie in the world. I can watch documentaries. I could read books. I could do anything like that. You're not going to convince me to smack my kids because that's my belief and that's what I believe is right. But they were just so terrified of the littlest thing getting in. So when that whole thing happened with Joe, when he started having those normal teenage thoughts, do you remember they separated him and sent him to that other house to wait while they arranged his dad to come pick him up to drop him off? So they wouldn't even let us, like, that was it. Like, he was, he no longer existed. So yeah, I mean, how terrifying that would be for any kid. Take any 15, 16, 17-year-old that you know of and say, okay, you're going to be cut off from everybody. You're going to be cut off from your friends, your family, your parents, like everything. You have to either know that there's something on the other side of that, or you have to be ready to pay that price. A friend of mine that was born in the Children of God, her and her brother left when she was like 17 and he was 15. And they were homeless on the streets in England for quite a while. But whatever their previous situation was, it was worth it to them. Unfortunately, that was the only choice that they had. It's sad. It's so sad. But not everybody can make that choice. Like, that's not necessarily an option that everybody had, even. What else stood out to you from the interview today?
The whole, like, I don't understand how you can hurt a child thing. I think that's a very common feeling. I think we talked about it last week with the whole, you don't get it because you're not them. And thank goodness you don't, because if you did get it, you would be one of them.
Yeah.
So, phew, we don't understand. Yay. But yeah, I think that's a big thing. But what really is the answer? It's a slow boiling, first of all. Usually, you're not instantly dropped in the hot water. You just slowly get accustomed to it till you realize that you're burnt. And then also the whole, we did it in love. Therefore, it was not wrong. I noticed somebody commented on the comments like, oh yeah, NAMBLA has the same thing. Yeah. And just talking about that, it's like these people have found a way somehow to justify in their minds that it's okay because we're doing it to show these little boys that we love them.
Yeah. And then you take those two elements and plop on top of it the pressure to conform. As humans, like, one of our deepest needs is connectivity. We need to feel connected. We need to feel like we belong. We want belonging. And hand in hand, there's that validation too. Validation is actually a really powerful way to show someone that you care for them, that you love them, that you respect them, because you're seeing them, you're acknowledging them, you're saying, yes, this is you, I see you. And so that was the carrot that they stuck in front of our parents' generation. And how contradictory the whole situation always was, because, you know, so you want to be a leader, one of the basic beliefs, right? That was one of the first publications you had to read. Really, their basic belief system was you shouldn't want to be a leader, right? You should not want to be in charge. You should just want to, only God works through me, type of a thing. But yet, leadership was used as a reward system, right? If you were doing good, if you were compliant, obedient, and then you would go up the ranks. And the second you did something wrong, straight back down. You get demoted. That just never held any type of water, because what they practiced was a demotion, promotion, reward system.
Real life chutes and ladders. Real life chutes and ladders. That's exactly what it was, though.
It really was.
Like if you just happen to land on this one spot that's the wrong number, because you never fucking knew what
you, never
what you
knew
were going to do that was wrong. You were you like, oh, never knew. Okay, I didn't know that was wrong. Once in a while, I knew. But most of the time, I did not know. There were times that I remember blatantly choosing to disobey, and now I'm fucking proud of myself for that shit. Yeah. But then, of course, I was like, why did I do that? What the hell was I thinking? But now I'm like, that is so awesome. You actually stood up for yourself. Yay.
Yeah, it took a lot. It took a lot under those circumstances.
And it's funny that you don't even realize that. I didn't realize then that that was some kind of little bit of strength of me coming out, trying to challenge the system or rebel. Specifically told, don't do something and then doing it.
Yeah. Like me taking home that cassette tape. That was an absolute act of revolution. It was like a rebellion. When you're so trapped, when you're so confined in those ways, sometimes it is the littlest things, the little daisy growing up through the crack in the cement type of a thing. Like sometimes that's what you had to hold on to. That was it. Real life shoots and ladders, fuck.
That was our whole fucking life, dude. It was a game of shoots and ladders.
It really was. And it was, and it's actually a really good metaphor because place, time, and whatever might have been going on in that home, that commune that you were in. So completely a roll of the dice. How many spaces you were allowed to move forward or move back, like you have no control over it. And you might land on this little tiny ladder that gets you up right to the second row. There was just like never any rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah, sure wasn't. That's a difficult way to grow up, never knowing what the standards are.
It's the most unsettling way of being raised for a kid.
Yeah. And I didn't even realize it until recently, but every time I get a new job on my first day, I always ask, what are the big no-nos? What do you get fired for? What am I not supposed to do? What are the big no-nos? And people are always like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, dude, come on, give me something. You gotta tell me what they are, man. I gotta know. I don't want to fucking do something and get in trouble and get yelled at here. And that was that insecurity coming through of not ever having, this is what it is. And this is what's going to happen if you do this. No.
Yeah.
It was just quit doing that. Whack. Why? What did I do? Doesn't matter what you do. Just sit up and quit doing it.
Yeah. That's actually a very interesting conversation that we haven't. We've talked around it a couple of different times, but it's a very interesting conversation of what it's been like for those of us that left, that escaped, and going to work in a world that we didn't know. And we were just talking about it earlier today. After the interview, your only value was what you could produce. And so, yeah, it ended up creating this false worth work ethic, because it's not like, I'm doing this because I have integrity for myself. And it can feel like that, certainly. And you can channel it towards that. But you also can't deny that there's this underlying side of, I have to prove myself to be allowed to be here. Work ethic is always like a huge thing. Every single one of us, oh my God, we never imagined you could work that hard or that well or that good. But then, yeah, at the same time, we also spent every single day in a regular circular job with translating ourselves, trying to struggle through the triggers or the fears, the anxieties, like you were saying, what's the big no-nos? Most people wouldn't think that's hanging over their head. Or even if it is, most people have a sort of a more blasé attitude towards it. But okay, I got fired. That shouldn't have happened. I shouldn't have done whatever. Moving along to the next step in my life, I'm going to go at it. And not that it's easy, it's terrible to have to find a new job. But for us, that would be devastating. right?
Yeah, it was. I got fired like 7 times.
Oh gosh, yes. It's a big discussion because there's also some of us second generation who stayed in the cult for much longer than the rest of us and ended up profiting off of that because they stayed through all the way until, oh, we can hold our own money. And they were getting training that landed them the second they finally did walk out the door. It landed them immediately into this extremely beneficial, privileged position. The whole work is a really interesting question. One of our former guests, I saw a post for her today. She was just like, I have all this experience with childcare. How do I put that on a resume? Like, how do you put what you did onto a resume? Because you know that we're chameleons. We can make anything happen out of nothing. And how do you translate that into a resume that is believable and that other people understand? The first time I went to go write a resume, I was just like, what in the actual? Did you ever have to write a resume?
Yeah, actually, ironically, one of my first jobs when I left was working for an employment listing service. And that's one of the things I did is help other people write their resumes.
Oh, very cool.
Even though I had never written one or had no clue what it was, I quickly educated myself and I helped other people do it. And I impressed everybody.
Yeah.
And I had no fucking clue what I was doing. I can write a hell of a resume today now.
Yes, the same.
I've been helping the kids with theirs.
Oh, nice. Very cool. But that's a huge thing. That's your first sort of mountain that you got to get over. I didn't even know there's such a thing as resumes.
If we're this good with just what we've learned, are self-taught, really, what the hell would we be like if we actually had education?
Yeah.
We're not going to go to school because then we would be way too daunting for anybody else.
And we wouldn't want to do that to the world. We got to give other people a chance. So
yeah, we don't want anyone else to feel
it's
like
for that. Society.
It's really a, what do you call it? It's a
altruistic.
Yes. Altruistic reasoning. Absolutely. Nothing selfish about it. No.
My youngest sister, she's very smart, very similar type of analytical thinker like me. I recognize a lot of our similarities, the way that we think. And because she was the youngest and because they finally got out of the cult, they both poured all their money and attention. She went to the best school. She was in a fraternity. She was able to intern during the summer for a senator in D.C. And yeah, and she's running around making a shit ton of money. And it's really hard for me not to look at her and be like, that could have been me. It's really hard. Who knows? Who knows who we would have been? When I first got out, I was thinking that I would want to be a lawyer. Because I do like debating. And on the other hand, it's one of my favorite phrases.
I just wanted to be a singer and an actress.
I know. You never know. It's never too late.
Technically, I am an actress. Because we're podcasting.
Does it count?
It can count in Jemima Land if it wants to count. It can count.
You're in the entertainment industry. Let's put it like that.
Yes. I'm in the entertainment industry. Yeah.
All right. We about to say goodnight. You are tired. I told you what my therapist brought up about that health scare that I had. We talked about it for quite some time. And she texted me afterwards. She was like, you know what just came to my mind is sleep deprivation. Because it's been 3-4 months now that I've had this insane insomnia. Yeah. 2-3 nights a week, staying up straight through, regularly staying up 48, 72 hours straight. And So when she said that, I was like, oh my Lord. So as much as I hate it, and as much as it's torture to be in bed, to try and go to sleep when your mind won't turn off, it's torture I would not do. Like, I'd get up and go do something then. That was what I was dealing with. But now I'm thinking, I need to power through this a little bit and get my rhythms back in a better place.
That's what I do. I wake up a lot of times after just maybe 4 hours, and my mind won't stop. And up and down 4 or 5 times. Now I'm thirsty. Now I have to pee. Now I have to poop. Now I need my inhaler. This and that. My mind just will not turn off. But I don't know. I just have this. You're not allowed to get up. I just tell myself, you are not allowed to do anything for this amount of time, except for being in that bed.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's getting shorter as I get older, but it's hard sometimes. It's really fucking hard. It is.
I used to actually listen to sleep talk downs, like a meditative sleep talk down. Yep. And that really helped. And I stopped listening to them. So I brought that back. So
yes. That's great. That's very helpful.
A little bit closer to the road to recovery. But when she said that about the sleep, I was like, fuck, it all makes sense now. Because I knew it wasn't anxiety, but no. Was it, like, I wouldn't go so far as to say, was it a stroke? Because
mini, you know, stroke.
Yeah, a mini stroke.
I think it probably was, but I think that the sleep
triggered by it.
Yes, triggered by, yes.
Yeah, because I mean, they did 3 different tests on my heart. They're like, your heart's 1,000% great. Your cholesterol's great. You're like, everything was great. Yeah, it was definitely triggered by something outside of my regular day to day. So,
what I've done is I've compromised with myself, and I allow myself to read. It's the only thing I'll allow myself to do, but read in my bed.
Read
if I can't sleep. I read until my eyelids start to droop. And then I'll turn off my light. And then if I lay down and I still can't read, I'll get back up and turn my light back on and keep reading some more. Eventually, yeah. I get tired enough where I fall asleep. But then if I wake up in the middle of the night, same thing. I'm only allowed to read. I'm not allowed to get out of my bed. I have to read in my bed. It's silly little rules, like I'm a child or something, but it's the only way I can regulate myself. I hate regulation, but at the same time, if I'm unregulated,
things start going wrong. Yeah.
No, my brain just cannot fucking function.
Yeah.
It just goes on like I'm on sleep mode or something. And I can't do fucking anything.
It's on strike.
Yeah. Seriously, though, my brain is like, nope, not doing it. And I'm just like, anyway, let's do this and let's do that. Nope, nothing fucking works.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we just have to learn to work with our bodies instead of against them, because we were basically raised to work against our body, against our minds. And now we're like, let's work together, body and mind. And they're like, oh, no.
To be fair, though, like, that's what I thought I was doing. My body will not sleep. My eyes will not close. My mind. So I'm going to work with what I'm being given right now. I thought that I was responding to my body. I'm sure it's a combination of different things that was causing me insomnia, but.
Yeah, it's not a wrong response. It's just a different response.
A little bit more healthy.
Draw another card. Try that one. What does it say? Draw 4. Okay. Draw 4 more. Reverse. Okay. Let's reverse.
Oh my Lord.
Oh, I'm silly. That was so funny when he was like, yeah, if you ask me if I masturbate, I'm just going to be like, yeah, I masturbate. Where did this come from?
Me too. I was just like, wait, what connect? What just happened? What did that connect?
How did we get there? The same thing. I was like, okay. When you said he was on Last Comic Standing, I was like, yes,
yeah.
Fucking watched the episode that he was on. I fucking watched that. No wonder
I really
he's
liked
so
him.
Familiar to me.
Yeah, he was younger and clean-shaven, but still.
But yeah, quite a bit different, actually. Yeah. I was looking up some of the, just like Googling him.
But I remember watching, I remember rooting for him. He was one of the people I rooted for. It's great to see that he's out and about and doing his thing still.
Yeah. It's good.
Doing what he loves.
Yeah. I think anything that makes people think is a good thing.
Yes. Challenge your perceptions. Challenge your perceptions. Always challenge your perceptions.
Yes. Challenge everything. I tell all the kids, question everything. And if someone says, don't question me, question them even more.
I told you that the first job that I got, my old boss, he used to call me Q because he's like, I never met anybody that asked as many questions as you asked.
Because we're just trying to not get in trouble over here.
So many, so many questions. And at one point, he was like, listen, Whisper, 10 questions. That's it. When you hit 10 questions in a work day, you're done. You cannot ask any more questions.
That's fucking funny. You're like, but sir.
Yeah, and then you'd be like, that's 11. No.
Just one more, please.
But yeah, he called me cute. That was really funny.
That's cute. All right, love.
I love you.
Wrap it up.
Yes.
In a pretty little bow and tell everyone to have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And we will have a happy Thanksgiving.
Enjoy your time, whether it's your chosen family or biological family, whatever you're doing this coming week, just know that you're going to get through it. Everything's going to be okay.
Even if you're by yourself.
You're by yourself.
Sometimes that's the best choice.
Yes.
When everything else around you is toxic.
It's a really important thing, though, because there's this pull to create traditions because we didn't have any. Yeah. So Thanksgiving is an easy time to lock onto it. But then we also have the opposite situation where most of us have a pretty toxic family environment. One way or another, it's toxic. And that can be really difficult and really triggering. I told my kids when we were first living by ourselves, I was like, we're going to make our own traditions. And you can. So make your own traditions. Don't feel obligated. Because your health, your sanity, your safety matters more than anything.
For sure.
Keep an eye on your pressure valve. Let out some of that steam.
You can feel when it's about to be too much. And you're about to get to that point where you're like, one more hay gets on this stack and the whole cart's going to fucking break. All right. Stay brave. Remember that every butterfly was once a caterpillar.